the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
There are now nearly 250 crypto asset service provider licenses issued by the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, the FSCA, which is perhaps a sign of the mainstreaming of the crypto sector. You might be surprised at some of the companies on that list. There's plenty of stockbrokers, financial advisors, and quite a few fund managers, and that's quite apart from the crypto exchanges. One of the primary reasons for introducing CASP licenses is to reduce fraud and eliminate bad actors. The idea being that when you get approached with a wonderful offer to make huge amounts of money from Bitcoin or some other crypto scheme, you can go to the FSCA website and check whether the company is licensed. If not, it's probably better to give it a miss. That said, we're still seeing quite a number of crypto scams out there. The FSCA has issued more than 20 warnings just in the first few weeks of this year, and one of them was against a company called CMFX Trading, which offered returns of up to 23,000 Rand from an initial investment of 6,000 Rand. And all of this would happen within days, apparently. There's also quite a few warnings about funeral companies, some of them selling life insurance policies without a license. So I think it's time we had a check-in with the head of enforcement at the FSCA, Gerard van Deventer, who's no stranger to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Hi, Gerard. It's good to talk to you again. It seems your workload at the FSCA has definitely increased, just judging from the number of warnings that you've issued this year. Maybe tell us, what are some of the recent trends that occupy your time? I did mention funeral homes as being a problem, but what else is going on there?
Thank you very much and good morning, Kieran. And as always, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to get these enforcement messages out there. So much heartache being caused. And as I've mentioned before, media, people like yourself are very important partners in enforcement, because if you don't get the message out, it doesn't really help much. So yes, let me pick up on your question. We've always been busy, and I don't think that's going to change. And whenever I'm allowed, I grow my team. So if I had to pick something that really kept us busy lately, it's definitely impersonations. So I'm sure you are very aware of how AI is used very effectively. Amazingly, actually, if it wasn't so bad, I would have been very impressed to make people say things that they never said, celebrities and semi-celebrities and so forth. But I don't want to talk about that. I want to rather focus on financial services and the area that the FSCA is operating in. And there I can pick out two issues, Kieran, and the one is impersonations of licensed financial service providers, FSPs as they are known, and then unfortunately also impersonations of the FSCA staff. So to give you a bit of an idea around that is what basically happened, and it all relates back to online trading, which really is such a dangerous thing for our public. And it comes down to this. People are phoned cold, and that must be your first red flag. If there's an investment house that cold call you, or that you find on social media, and you are then encouraged to trade in CFDs or Forex or whatever the case may be. And even if it's a legitimate operation, you know, I'm not sure about the stats, but it's something like 70 to 80% of investors lose money on that. Then, of course, these people lose their money. And that makes them quite desperate. So they will phone in and say, what happened? Why is all my money gone? Why is my account empty? And then they'll be reassured by saying, don't worry, commit more funds to the trading and we'll help you to trade out of this loss position. Desperate people don't make good choices, Kieran, as you know. And that is then the second round, the second bunch of money disappears. And moving from impersonating FSPs to impersonating the FSA, the third round that comes around is then either the same people or other scammers will then contact these people and say, I see you've lost a lot of money. Very sorry about that. Don't worry. I'm from the FSCA and I'm going to help you to get the money back. But first you have to pay this fee. And that will be round number three. So very, very sad and really weaponizing desperation, if I can put it that way. So that's, if I had to pick something, that would certainly be it. And they are getting much better. That you've definitely seen that. Better language, proper websites. It's not in, like a couple of months ago, we used to warn people to say, look out for bad language, etc. It's not like that anymore. And I think that's probably where AI comes in. So we do all we can to take down websites. We are a member of an international organization, IOSCO, International Organization for Securities Commissioners. There's a project to work on these scams, platform scams, and so forth that we're part of. And of course, we interact with these social media platforms to try and convince them to be a bit more careful with what they allow. And I have to, I'm going so far as actually mentioning one platform specifically, and that is Telegram. It is a very popular platform for scammers. I think there's probably some reasons behind it, and we are engaging them, and also on the international front, engaging them to see if we can improve that. And I hope that leads to something. But let me go to your second question on the funeral parlors. Yes, you know, I've mentioned it before. It's a very unique problem we have in South Africa. When I presented that on the national front, people would say, that's interesting. But as you also know, funeral parlors play a very important role in our rural areas. And I said before that we're not dealing with hardened criminals here. You're dealing with a function that needs to be regulated, but it isn't. And what really happens there, it's funeral parlors taking monthly contributions. And then when somebody dies, you are assured of the services. Now, if it was a policy, a life policy, you would have a choice between the services or the money so that you have freedom of choice. It doesn't work like that. But that's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is, what if that funeral parlor cannot stand in, doesn't have the deep pockets, the risk management, as you can imagine, and so forth, to deal with that? So we have a tremendous drive with the Prudential Authority as well to try and convince this industry to regularize. So our main approach as enforcement, I'm talking about now enforcement division, my colleagues in supervision and licensing are doing their own thing. But from an enforcement point of view, we've taken a bit of a softer approach in the sense that when we find them, we investigate them, and we provide them with an opportunity to regularize. So we have something that we imported in our law from Australia, not the rugby, just the enforceable undertaking. And the enforceable undertaking is basically a regulatory tool where you can agree to fix something that's broken. So we give them the opportunity to sign an enforceable undertaking so that they can regularize. And that means they must then get their clients properly underwritten. And there's been a fair amount of success with that. I'll give you some statistics now. But what you have picked up is lately we've been warning the public about certain funeral parlors. So the background to that and what is different now than from before when you and I spoke is that we have this approach if you cooperate and you regularize. If you don't, or if you don't cooperate with the investigation, and that also happens, of course, then we take a different route. Then we impose sanctions. We even often consider search and seizure warrants, and that's applied for in a court of law. And then we get the information ourselves. And then, of course, we also warn the public to stay away from that specific funeral parlor. There's a long way to go. There are many. But there is certainly, in my mind, a change towards regularization. And in many instances, we see that the associations, the funeral parlor associations, is slowly coming on board. And I'm very happy about that. So just to give you an idea of some statistics, For the last 2 years, we received 245 cases. We finalized 141, and we have 172 cases ongoing. So if you say we're busy, you are not wrong. I have a special unit dealing only with that. We've sanctioned 61 of them, and enforceable undertakings amount to 46 of them. So we're slowly getting there, but that is what's behind those warnings that you are seeing.
Right. And I saw recently that there was a fine imposed on one of these funeral homes for about 11 million rand, which is quite heavy. But I just want to go back to this thing about scamming, because we recently ran a story in MoneyWeb about somebody, you know, a very smart guy who had 700,000 rand stolen by these scammers, and it was all done on email. Where the company that was doing it was impersonating Luno. So they'd had the Luno logo on the emails that they were sending him, offering him this fantastic return. You know, it started off pretty small. You know, you invest 6,000 Rand, we're going to turn that into maybe 30,000 Rand within a few weeks. Then when it comes to time to withdraw that, they said, no, don't do that. Just reinvest that. In fact, why don't you add a little bit more? Why don't you add another 15,000 Rand? And so it went on. And then eventually when he said, look, I really need to pull my money out, I need it, all of these fees start coming up. So you've got to pay SARS, as if, you know, this company is going to be an agent for SARS and collect taxes on their behalf. You've got to pay taxes. You've got to pay a levy, a hold, you know, to get the hold over your funds released, and so on and so forth. And it occurred to me that a lot of these people, they can see the anxiety that people go through in these scams, but they see that as an opportunity to upsell the person. I mean, it's very cold and it's very dark. These people do not have a conscience, but that is how they see it. Is this what you're seeing?
Absolutely, Kieran. It's such a good point that you're making. We've recently seen some transcripts, listened to some tape recordings, and it is extremely cold. And also, if you get your hands on the training of these call center operators, you will not believe how cold that is. It is absolutely that. As I said, it's weaponizing desperation. It's absolutely, they get trained and they do it very efficiently to feed off that fear and then to convince people. And the comments that you see around it is horrific. There's absolutely no humanity in it. It's just about extracting the most. And also, they're also trained to, once you've extracted as much as you can, then you don't have any further conversations, because there's nothing for you left. And it's completely against human nature. You know, you and I would feel sorry, and we would see where else we can help and so forth. It's a completely different ball game, and sympathy has nothing to do with it.
Let's turn to the crypto side of things. 248 CASP licenses. That's a lot to monitor. Are you satisfied that the crypto sector is behaving as the licensing regime was intended?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't know if I could ever say I'll be satisfied that everybody's behaving, but I think we need to acknowledge that the crypto industry, and I'm talking straightforward crypto providers now, they have taken a massive effort to regularize in that exemption period that they were granted. And as you pointed out, it's actually now 256 licenses. Those people are licensed, and they are being regulated. So supervising them is, of course, not my primary goal. Mine is when it goes wrong, so it's my supervisory colleagues. I don't think crypto providers, licensed crypto providers, are really the issue. I don't think there's cause for major concern, especially the big players. I have to give them this, Kieran. They are pro-regulation. They're very helpful. So my interaction with them is often, or my team's interaction is often about assisting with an investigation. very happy to assist. They do it very well. They contribute and they take part in things like our financial crime symposium, and they provide training to the Hawks and to my teams and so forth. So I see a very dedicated, the bigger guys, I see a very dedicated group that I think that's really good news. But that's of course the crypto providers. And one must not confuse them with the ODP market.
So just explain what the ODP is. That's the over-the-counter derivatives providers. People selling CFDs.
That's right. That's correct. So it's not selling the actual crypto. So it's not fiat to crypto and crypto to fiat. It is when you trade in the derivative. No, I think it's a common cause that crypto is not a low-risk investment. And a CFD, because of its nature, a derivative because of its nature, is most definitely a high-risk financial instrument. So you've got a really high-risk product there. And what we see, unfortunately, in that space is South African financial services providers extending their license to include an intermediary license for crypto. So they're supposed to play the intermediary role, and that is fine. And a lot of them do it. So they don't need major risk management. They don't need deep pockets because they are not the issuer of the CFDs. They're not on the other side of the transaction. That's what you need the ODP for, the over-the-counter provider. And unfortunately, what we've seen in a few cases now, so we know this is a real possibility. It happened a few times. Is that you get a South African FSP that puts himself in that position, and then if they are asked, where is your ODP, your product provider, as opposed to your service provider, it turns out that this ODP is in some jurisdiction where financial services is not regulated. Very good example of that is St. Vincent and the Grenadines. There's no financial regulation. So you can set up a company there. Sometimes it's just a shell company. Sometimes it's dormant. And that is supposed to be your ODP. So what's really happening there is the FSP is running the ODP leg, which means, and as you know, Kieran, this, when you talk CFDs and derivatives, it's a zero-sum game. So whatever the client wins, the ODP loses. And whatever the client loses, the ODP wins. You cannot get a better example of a conflict of interest than that. So that FSP will then go out and actively advise clients to trade or to commit more money, etc., in a complete conflict situation. So in the past, we've taken a few of these down. We got to the whole story, even in those jurisdictions where there's not a lot of cooperation. And they have been license withdrawn and out of the country, but there is some ongoing. So That to me, the ODP market in crypto is the big problem. And if only I can get that message out to the public that is not a place for a man holding his pension in his hand, or for the ordinary man in the street, is certainly not. And that it gives me gray hairs. I can just say, yeah.
I mean, one of the complaints that we've received about this, these CFD providers, is, you know, you're supposed to disclose, for example, certainly in Europe, how many of your clients are losing, and the figure is staggeringly high. It's normally above 70 or 80%. And I think there's some research out of the United States showing more than 90%. But I think what a lot of people who've gotten into this CFD trading, and they're always told, you know, well, put in a stop loss. A stop loss is there to protect you losing too much money. And they find that the market didn't go anywhere near their stop loss, yet they got taken out. In other words, the CFD provider knocked them out of a trade because of that exact reason that you said, you know, it's a zero-sum game. So either the house wins or the gambler wins, if I can put it that way. Is there any way that you can monitor that type of thing? Or is it only through complaints?
Real time, not possible. You know, if you're looking at a financial market or an exchange, that is monitored real time, which is great. But because this is over the counter, we're certainly not there yet. And it's something, you know, that there's been a lot of discussion on is to centralize those transactions. It'll definitely make a big difference. But you can imagine what a mammoth task that is. And you're so right about this. Because it's a geared product, you can be knocked out very quickly. And there's also tricks. We've seen it in our investigations. There's also tricks. If the ODP is about to lose, then suddenly something goes wrong with the system, or suddenly, you know, there's some complaint about your account and you can't trade now and so forth. So it's quite bad. And I don't want to not acknowledge that there are some ODP providers that's doing a really good job. There's some South African ODP providers that are doing a good job. There's some foreign ODP providers that's in a properly regulated environment that's doing a good job. But I think the bottom line of what you have said, Kieran, is it's not a place for people who don't have money to spare. It's certainly not.
Now, the FSCA recently launched an initiative to fight financial crime. This is quite an interesting one. And you've done that together with the Corruption and Integrity Unit at Northwest University. You've been speaking around this subject, but tell us, what's the purpose of this program and what do you hope to achieve?
Certainly, I'm very happy to do that. We've been very quiet about it for the last 4 years because, you know, it's always better to tell the public what you have done than what you want to do. But basically what this is about, it is an annual symposium. We've just had our fourth one that we co-host with Northwest, the business school, Integrity Studies. And the idea behind this is to create a platform, a secure platform that is. So what I mean by that is that it's not open to invitation, to the public. It's not a conference, so to speak, Kieran. Best way to describe it, it's a really big meeting with about 120 people there, but it's by invitation only. And it's supposed to be a secure platform where important role players in fighting for anti-financial crime fighters, we can sit around the table, and very importantly, and we made that clear from day one, is not finger pointing, not fighting about who didn't do what, where we can find solutions, and most importantly, where we can collaborate and say, how can we fix things? And that's what it's about. So we've just had our fourth one, so we have a bit of history. So every time when we close out the symposium, we have a homework list to say who's going to do what. We put together little committees, and how are we going to help people. So if you want an idea of who's there, who's invited, it's basically high level representatives of law enforcement. So there's a few Hawks generals there that I've come to know well now, law enforcement, and then of course prosecuting authority. And some of their specialized units, and the investment industry represented by a body, an industry body, insurance, banking industry, and of course financial investigations, and one or two government bodies and academia. So the idea behind is this: we sit around the table, so to speak, and we see where the needs are. And we collaborate. A lot has happened in terms of training, and this is where I say the CUSPs have actually also come to the table. They've offered training, and they've offered assistance and so forth. And the thing, it's really all about building trust amongst the different agencies that has to combat financial crime. Projects that's gone quite far down the line. Of course, unfortunately, this is not something that we can say too much about. But projects that we focused on is, for instance, public-private information sharing. That's always a problem. There's always somebody who's going to say, "I can't help you at all." So this is a forum where we can say, "Well, how much can I help you? What can I share with you?" And then, of course, the much more difficult one in South Africa is private information sharing. So if you think about it, somebody might be running a tremendous and impressive money laundering scheme, but the one bank doesn't know what the other bank is doing. So this is also an opportunity for the banks to say, how can we get around confidentiality to protect the public? For no other reason but to protect the public. Because in our cases, we see what we see in one bank account, we see in another bank account as well. So they actually benefit from this confidentiality. So that's the type of things discussed here. This year, lots of discussion about artificial intelligence. We actually had a professor from, we flew him in from Australia. That was very, very interesting on where this is going. And also, how can it help us, of course? Obviously, we speak of grey listing and, as I say, joint investigation, training, and so forth. So it's just to make us all more efficient. And I think it is really going very well.
Very good. Now, finally, Gerard, we've spoken about this before, but it is worth mentioning again. Maybe just run us through what are the telltale signs of a scam? And this is an evolving thing. We just recently saw Bybit, you know, which had been hacked by North Korean hackers. Very, very sophisticated hack where they were impersonating the people who are supposed to sign off on the private keys when you're doing a Bitcoin transaction. This is something new, the level of sophistication that is coming in. So tell us but from a consumer point of view, what we should be looking for.
I totally agree with you. The sophistication of scams is unbelievable. And if I wasn't actually in this business, I'm sure I would have been scammed. So I have a lot of sympathy for the public on this. But I think still at the top of the list must be unrealistic returns. If somebody had that knowledge of how to make a lot of money and you know what returns are being offered to the public, then certainly you will not share that information. So that would be still the top tip, is stay away from unrealistic returns. Certainly stay away from any offers on social media and be very, very careful of cold calling. If you want to invest, speak to a financial services provider, speak to your bank, speak to whoever, but not on social media. I yet have to see real offers for investments that comes through social media. I think another one that the public must always keep in the back of the mind is the claim that they do not need a license. Really, if you look at the landscape at the moment, Kiran, what can you do today in the financial world that does not require a license from either the FCA or the Prudential Authority or the National Credit Regulator? You require a license to do anything in the financial services industry. So do not believe that. And there's always some fancy words there that very few people know what it means. And that's how they confuse the public. As I said, investment opportunities on social media, stay away from that. The other thing that I would actually add would be, if there's a complete absence of advice on suitability, that's such an important issue. If you've got a licensed advisor, he or she knows the most important thing to discuss with client is suitability of the product. In other words, what is my risk appetite and what is the risk rating of this? If that's absent, and that's against the law actually for you to be absent, but if that's absent, then you must wonder what is behind it. And I think the last line on that, Kiran, must be, as you pointed out, very sophisticated. AI is a great help. So don't believe anything that you hear that anybody is saying. Phone back. Ask a financial services provider, contact the FCA, but please don't part with your money before you do that.
And Gerard, tell me, are you getting cooperation from the local crypto industry in your investigations? When you're asking for information, are they forthcoming? And how do the South African crypto providers compare with the overseas ones?
So, yeah, Kiran, I'm very happy to say that the South African crypto providers that holds a license from us are very cooperative. And there's a specific example of an investigation we're busy with where it really showed up where the big the bigger guys who are properly regulated, South Africans, full cooperation. We got all the information we requested, and it's so important for us to be able to follow crypto where it goes. But of course, then you get those crypto providers that, as I mentioned before, regulated in some, or not regulated, actually domiciled in some jurisdiction where there's no regulation. And in that case, the answer is very short. We don't keep information on our clients, but the real answer is we don't cooperate with law enforcement or regulators.
Fascinating discussion. We're going to leave it there. That was Gerard van Deventer, Head of Enforcement at the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. Thanks very much for joining us, Gerard.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.